All right, so today we're diving deep into something pretty fundamental, happiness.
Yeah, happiness and well-being, especially when it comes to tackling challenges head-on, whether that's in like the entrepreneurial world or just navigating life in general.
Exactly. And we've got this super interesting resource to guide
Oh,
us.
yeah.
It's a PDF actually called iSource Week 10 Mindset and Happiness. Kind of a mouthful, I know.
But hey, a good mouthful, right? Mindset and happiness, two things we could all use a little more of.
Absolutely. And it's from an entrepreneurship course, which is interesting because you might not immediately think entrepreneurship and happiness go hand in hand.
Right, because there's risk, there's uncertainty, maybe even like a fear of failure.
Yeah, totally. But what we're going to unpack today is how much our mindset actually plays a role in all of that, how it impacts our overall well-being, regardless of what we're pursuing, whether it's building a business or, I don't know, learning a new skill.
Basically, how to equip ourselves with the mental tools for not just surviving, but actually thriving.
Exactly. So our mission today is to really get why focusing on our internal mindset is so crucial for long-term happiness.
And we'll be pulling out some really practical insights from CBT, that's cognitive behavioral therapy.
Yeah, CBT and also positive psychology to give you some actionable takeaways you can actually use in your own life.
Because it's one thing to talk about happiness, but it's another to actually understand how to cultivate it.
For sure. So the source material jumps right in with this question. Why even bother learning about happiness?
Kind of a funny question, right? Like, who wouldn't want to be happier?
Yeah, you'd think it'd be obvious, but the source frames it in a way that really makes you think.
How so?
Well, it talks about how understanding happiness can impact how you engage with university, how you build a meaningful career, and it even brings up this concept called ikigai.
Ikigai, I've heard of that.
Yeah, it's this Japanese idea of finding your purpose, that sweet spot where what you love, what you're good at, what the world needs, and what you can be paid for all intersect.
Right, so learning about happiness isn't just about feeling good, it's about aligning yourself with your purpose and living a more fulfilling life.
Exactly. And a core argument that keeps coming up is that long-term happiness isn't actually all about external factors, you know, like how much money you have or your job title.
It's more about your internal state, your mindset, the positive beliefs and attitudes you cultivate.
Yeah, which makes sense when you think about it.
Like you could win the lottery and still be miserable, right?
Totally. And the source uses the example of entrepreneurship to illustrate this.
Because starting a business is full of ups and downs,
Oh,
right?
yeah, for sure. So even if a venture doesn't succeed in the traditional sense, the real value often lies in the personal growth you experience, the internal resources you build along the way.
Those positive beliefs and attitudes that stick with you, even if the business itself doesn't.
Exactly. And that resilience, that ability to bounce back, that's something that's valuable no matter what you're doing in life.
So, it's about building yourself up from the inside out, not relying on external validation or success to define your happiness.
Right. Now, the source also paints a bit of a sobering picture when it comes to the current state of mental well-being, especially among young people.
Like, what kind of data are we talking about?
Well, it cites some stats from 2019 in Canada showing a significant percentage of university students reporting overwhelming anxiety and debilitating depression.
Whoa, really?
Yeah, and even a number who had thought about suicide.
That's heavy stuff.
It is. And they also mentioned similar figures from the US in 2016, showing a noticeable increase in students seeking mental health counseling.
So there's clearly a trend here.
Right. And the source brings up an interesting perspective from a book called The Coddling of the American Mind by Lukianoff and Haight.
Okay, I've heard of that book.
Yeah, it's been pretty influential. And their argument is that certain bad ideas, or what they call cognitive distortions, are contributing to this sense of fragility and increased anxiety we're seeing.
So, like, flawed ways of thinking are actually making us feel worse.
Exactly. And it's important to understand that these feelings of anxiety and depression, they don't always reflect reality accurately.
They can be driven by these distortions, these unhelpful thought patterns.
And that's where CBT, or cognitive behavioral therapy, comes in.
CBT aims to help people identify and correct these negative thought patterns so they can feel better and function more effectively.
So you're not just stuck with these negative thoughts and feelings, you can actually learn to challenge them and change them.
Right. Now, one of the main untruths they discuss is the idea that what doesn't kill you makes you weaker.
Like, if you go through something difficult, you're automatically going to be scarred or damaged by it.
Yeah, the source compares it to thinking of yourself as a delicate wine glass that's just going to shatter under pressure.
But as we all know, that's not always the case.
No, in fact, there's this whole concept of anti-fragility.
Anti-fragility.
Yeah, think of it this way. A wine glass breaks. A plastic mug stays the same.
Okay.
But something anti-fragile, like, say, your muscles after a workout, actually gets stronger through the challenge.
Makes sense.
Or your immune system after fighting off an illness, it actually gets stronger too.
Ah, so it's about adapting and becoming more resilient.
Exactly. And the source even uses the example of our thinking skills, they improve by tackling difficult problems.
Oh, I like that.
Like, have you ever noticed that yourself? When you finally crack a tough problem, you come out the other side feeling sharper, more capable.
Absolutely. It's that aha moment, that sense of accomplishment.
So it's not about avoiding challenges altogether. It's about finding that sweet spot, that growth zone, where you're pushed outside your comfort zone, but not completely overwhelmed.
Right. Because if you always stay in your comfort zone, you never really grow.
Exactly. And the source quotes Lukianoff and Haidt on this, emphasizing that avoiding the things we fear can actually be counterproductive in the long run.
Makes sense. We need to face those fears to build resilience, to become more anti-fragile.
Now, another really common cognitive distortion the source highlights is what they call the untruth of emotional reasoning.
Okay, what's that all about?
It's this idea that you should always trust your feelings, that your gut reaction is always right.
I can see how that could be a trap.
Yeah, because our emotions aren't always the most reliable guide, especially when they're influenced by those cognitive distortions we talked about.
Right, they can be misleading.
And the source uses this powerful metaphor to illustrate this. The elephant and executive.
Okay, I'm intrigued. Tell me more about this elephant and executive.
So imagine your mind is like a rider on an elephant.
Right.
The executive is the rider, our conscious, rational mind, the part of us that thinks things through, makes plans, and tries to be in control. But the elephant represents everything else.
Mm.
Our subconscious, our emotions, our gut reactions, all those automatic responses that happen without us even realizing it.
So the elephant is kind of like the powerhouse, the driving force behind a lot of our behavior.
Exactly. And the problem is, while we like to think the executive is in charge calling the shots, the elephant is often much more powerful.
So, like, we might think we're making rational decisions, but our emotions are actually pulling the strings behind the scenes.
In a lot of cases, yes. And the elephant isn't always wrong, but when it's fueled by those cognitive distortions, those unhelpful thought patterns, it can really lead us astray.
That makes sense. It's like when you feel intensely anxious about something and then later you realize it wasn't actually a big deal.
Yeah, that's a classic example of the elephant misinterpreting things, letting those automatic emotional responses take over.
So how do we get better at recognizing that and not just blindly following our elephant wherever it wants to go?
That's where CBT comes in, offering tools and techniques to help us examine those underlying thoughts and feelings, to question their validity, and to start making more conscious, intentional choices.
So it's not about suppressing or ignoring our emotions. It's about learning to understand them better and not letting them control us.
Precisely. And the source points out that emotional reasoning, this tendency to let our emotions dictate our reality, is actually listed as one of the top 10 cognitive distortions.
So it's a really common trap that a lot of people fall into.
Absolutely. And CBT can help us break free from that.
Now, you mentioned earlier that CBT can help us feel better and function more effectively.
Yeah. So let's dive into how it actually works.
Sounds good.
So the central idea behind CBT, as the source explains, is that our negative thoughts are often the primary drivers of our negative emotions.
Okay.
And this can create a really vicious cycle.
Like a downward spiral.
Exactly. Yep. Irrational negative beliefs lead to strong negative feelings, which then further distort our thinking, making us look for evidence to confirm those negative beliefs.
So it's like we get stuck in this mental loop of negativity.
Exactly. And CBT helps us break free from that loop.
How so?
By giving us tools to examine those thoughts, to question their validity, and to challenge them with evidence.
Okay, so it's about being more objective, more critical of our own thoughts.
Precisely. And the source emphasizes that there's a ton of research supporting CBT's effectiveness for a variety of issues, including anxiety, depression, and even things like insomnia and chronic pain.
Wow, so it's not just for mental health conditions. It can be helpful for a wide range of challenges.
Yeah, it's really versatile. And it even mentions that in some cases, CBT can offer similar immediate relief to medication.
but with the added benefit of potentially longer-lasting effects because you're actually learning how to manage your thoughts and feelings.
Exactly. It's about equipping yourself with the skills to navigate challenges effectively, not just masking the symptoms.
Now, the source uses this interesting analogy of moving from Menegate to plus one to describe how CBT works.
Can you elaborate on that?
Yeah. So imagine a scale of well-being where Menegate 10 is extreme distress and plus 10 is like pure bliss.
Okay.
If you're experiencing significant distress, let's say you're at a negative 8, CBT can help bring you to a more neutral or slightly positive state, maybe a plus 1.
So it's about reducing the negative impact of those dysfunctional thoughts and emotions, getting you to a baseline where you can function more effectively.
Exactly. It's like getting out of the red zone and back into the green.
Makes sense. So CBT helps us get out of that negative zone, but what about actually building happiness and a positive outlook?
Yeah, how do we go beyond just feeling okay to feeling genuinely good, even great?
That's where positive psychology comes in.
So it's like the next level up.
Right. The source frames positive psychology as the field that helps us move from that plus one to, say, a plus 9.
So it's not just about lessening the bad stuff, it's about actively cultivating the good stuff.
Exactly. And it's about fostering what's known as PERMA.
PERMA.
Yeah, it stands for positive emotions, engagement, relationships, meaning, and achievement.
Okay, so it's a holistic approach to well-being, encompassing different aspects of a fulfilling life.
Precisely. And it's important to note that positive psychology recognizes that experiencing a full range of emotions is healthy.
You don't have to be happy all the time.
No, not at all. It's about having a healthy balance and also about cultivating self-compassion.
Self-compassion.
Yeah, allowing yourself to feel what you feel without judgment, treating yourself with the same kindness and understanding you would offer to a friend.
Oh, I like that.
It's about being your own best friend, your own cheerleader.
So we've got CBT helping us manage the negative and positive psychology, helping us build the positive.
Now, within CBT, there's also this evolution towards what's often called reframing.
Reframing. What's that all about?
It's basically a way to take those CBT principles and apply them in a way that helps you move beyond just feeling okay to truly feeling great.
Okay, so it's like CBT 2.0?
Yeah, you can think of it that way. And the source associates this with the work of Dr. David Burns, particularly his book, Feeling Great.
Feeling Great. I like the sound of that.
It's all about taking those cognitive techniques and using them to shift your mindset towards greater happiness and well-being.
So how does this positive reframing actually work?
The source outlines a pretty straightforward three-step process.
Okay, lay it on me.
First, you identify any potential benefits that might be associated with those negative thoughts and feelings you're experiencing.
Benefits? From negative thoughts?
Yeah, it might sound counterintuitive, but sometimes even anxiety can have a motivating effect.
I guess I can see that.
Like maybe that anxiety is pushing you to prepare more thoroughly for a presentation, which ultimately leads to a better outcome.
Okay, so it's about looking for the silver lining, even in the midst of something negative.
Exactly. Then the second step is what's called the magic dial.
Magic dial. I like it already.
It's basically a visualization technique where you imagine dialing down the intensity of those negative feelings while still holding on to any of those potential benefits you identified.
So you're not trying to eliminate the feeling altogether, just reduce its power over you.
Right. And the third step is positive self-talk.
Okay, now self-talk can sometimes sound a bit cheesy, like something out of a motivational poster.
I know what you mean. But the source emphasizes that effective positive self-talk is about more than just repeating empty affirmations.
It has to be genuine.
Exactly. It needs to be truthful, and it needs to be focused on reinforcing the specific beliefs and behaviors you want to cultivate.
So it's not about lying to yourself. It's about choosing more helpful and realistic thoughts to focus on.
Right. The source provides some examples, like practicing saying to yourself, "I remain calm and in control while driving," if you tend to get road rage.
Or, "I approach challenges with confidence and a positive attitude," if you tend to shy away from new things.
Exactly. It's about consciously shifting your internal dialogue to support the person you want to be.
Now, they also mentioned this double standard technique, which sounds interesting.
Oh, yeah, that one's powerful.
What's it about?
It's all about cultivating self-compassion, recognizing that we often hold ourselves to incredibly harsh standards that we would never apply to anyone else.
Well, totally. I'm way harder on myself than I would ever be on a friend.
Exactly. So the double standard technique helps you recognize that discrepancy and encourages you to treat yourself with the same kindness and understanding you would offer to others.
It's like that saying, treat yourself like someone you love.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, the source also briefly mentions Thrive TMU.
You know what that is.
I'm guessing it's some kind of resource related to student well-being.
You got it. It's actually a student well-being initiative at Toronto Metropolitan University.
Makes sense.
It offers a variety of support services and resources aimed at promoting mental health and resilience among students.
So if you're a student at TMU, it sounds like a great resource to check out.
Definitely.
Now let's circle back to CBT and positive psychology for a moment.
Sure.
We've talked about how CBT can help us manage the negative, and positive psychology focuses on building the positive.
And the source makes an important distinction here.
What's that?
It says that CBT often focuses on addressing negative beliefs, while positive psychology focuses on actively cultivating positive ones.
So it's not just about removing the bad, it's about adding the good.
Exactly. And they highlight 5 core negative dysfunctional beliefs that are often at play.
These are like deep-seated beliefs that can really fuel anxiety and depression, right?
Right. They include feeling worthless, helpless, believing others are untrustworthy, having a pessimistic view of the world, and feeling like you have no control over your life, what's called an external locus of control.
That's a pretty heavy list.
It is, but the good news is, for each of these negative beliefs, there's a corresponding positive belief that we can cultivate.
Okay, so what are the positive counterparts?
Well, the antidote to feeling worthless is developing authentic self-esteem.
Authentic self-esteem. So it's not about arrogance or ego. It's about genuinely believing in your own value.
Exactly. And instead of helplessness, it's about cultivating self-efficacy, that belief in your ability to achieve your goals.
And for distrust of others, the positive counterpart is empathy, right?
You got it. And a pessimistic worldview is replaced by optimism and a belief in a benevolent worldview.
So instead of seeing the world as a hostile place, you see it as a place full of opportunity and goodness.
Right. And finally, an external locus of control shifts to an internal locus of control.
That's about believing that you have agency, that you have the power to shape your own life.
Exactly. And it's interesting how the source frames these positive beliefs within an entrepreneurial context.
Because in the entrepreneurial world, you need a strong belief in yourself and your ability to make things happen.
For sure. And the source even provides a detailed definition of self-efficacy from Wikipedia, highlighting how important it is for taking initiative, persevering through challenges, and bouncing back from setbacks.
It's about having that can-do spirit.
Now, it's important to note that the source does caution against going too far in the other direction.
Like becoming overly confident or narcissistic.
Exactly. There's a healthy balance to strike.
It's not about denying reality. It's about choosing to focus on the positive while still being grounded in truth.
Right. And they also mentioned the primacy of consciousness fallacy. It's this idea that your thoughts alone can control reality. That if you just think positive thoughts, everything will magically work out.
Ah, so it's not about ignoring the challenges or pretending they don't exist.
Exactly. And the source emphasizes that these positive beliefs can't just be wishful thinking.
They need a solid foundation.
They need to be built on a foundation of truth, which comes from taking positive actions, setting meaningful goals, and developing helpful habits.
So it's about the reinforcing the believing, not the other way around.
Right. You can't just tell yourself you're capable. You need to engage in activities that build your competence.
It's like that saying, actions speak louder than words.
Exactly. And the source contrasts this with simply engaging in vague positive thinking, or what they call the self-esteem movement of the past.
Which often lacked that grounding in real action.
Right. It was all about feeling good without necessarily doing the work to back it up.
So it's about walking the walk, not just talking the talk.
Exactly. And this leads into the concept of learned optimism.
Learned optimism. So you can actually learn to be more optimistic.
That's the idea. The source explains that it involves understanding your own explanatory style, which is basically how you typically explain events to yourself.
Like whether you tend to blame yourself when things go wrong or see it as an opportunity to learn.
Exactly. And they highlight 3 key dimensions: permanence, pervasiveness, and personalization.
Okay, break those down for me.
Sure. Permanence refers to whether you see negative events as temporary setbacks or as permanent conditions.
So like, I failed this test versus I'm a failure.
Exactly. Pervasiveness is about whether you see a negative event as affecting just one area of your life or spilling over into everything.
So like, I'm having a bad day at work versus my whole life is falling apart.
Right. And personalization is about whether you tend to blame yourself for negative events or see them as caused by external factors.
So like, it's my fault I got fired versus the company was downsizing and I was unlucky.
Exactly. And learned optimism involves recognizing these patterns and consciously choosing to explain events to yourself in a more optimistic way.
So instead of saying, I always mess things up, you might say, this didn't go as planned, but I can learn from it and do better next time.
Exactly. It's about shifting your self-talk to be more empowering and supportive.
Now, shifting gears a bit, the source connects this idea of a positive mindset to entrepreneurial endeavors.
Makes sense, right? Entrepreneurship requires a lot of resilience and optimism.
Totally. And they emphasize that having an entrepreneurial mindset is really built on those five key positive beliefs we discussed earlier. Authentic self-esteem, self-efficacy, empathy, optimism, and internal locus of control.
They're like the pillars of a strong and resilient mindset.
And they directly counter those negative dysfunctional beliefs that can hold us back.
So instead of feeling worthless, you cultivate a sense of authentic self-worth.
Instead of feeling helpless, you believe in your ability to make things happen.
Instead of distrusting others, you approach them with empathy and understanding.
Instead of seeing the world as a hostile place, you see it as full of opportunity.
And instead of feeling like a victim of circumstance, you believe in your own agency to shape your life.
It's about taking ownership of your thoughts, feelings, and actions.
Exactly. And a key aspect here is actively cultivating that internal locus of control.
Which means?
It means consciously guiding that elephant, our automatic emotional responses, rather than letting them dictate our actions.
So it's about being the rider, not just the passenger.
Exactly. Now, the source also talks about entrepreneurial attitudes, which are a bit different from beliefs.
How so?
Well, beliefs are often more deeply ingrained, like underlying assumptions about the world and ourselves.
Whereas attitudes are more like our outward expression of those beliefs.
Yeah, you could think of it that way. Attitudes are more consciously chosen and applied in specific situations.
And they're often easier to practice and develop than those deeply rooted beliefs.
Exactly. So the source highlights seven key positive entrepreneurial attitudes.
Okay, let's hear them.
The first is curiosity, that genuine desire to learn, explore new ideas, and spot potential opportunities.
It's about being open to new experiences and constantly seeking knowledge.
Right. Then there's proactivity, which is about being a self-starter, taking initiative, and anticipating challenges before they become major problems.
So it's about being proactive rather than reactive.
Exactly. Next is growth mindset, which is all about embracing challenges as opportunities for personal learning and development.
It's about seeing setbacks as stepping stones rather than roadblocks.
Right. And then there's resiliency, that ability to bounce back from setbacks, to persevere through tough times, and to come out stronger on the other side.
It's about having grit and determination.
Exactly. And then we have empathy and user centricity, which are all about understanding and actively listening to the needs and perspectives of others.
It's about putting yourself in other people's shoes and trying to see the world from their point of view.
Right. And this is crucial in entrepreneurship because it's all about creating value for others.
Makes sense. What else?
We've also got creativity and design thinking, which provide practical tools and approaches for innovation.
So it's not just about having good ideas, it's about having a process for generating and refining those ideas.
Exactly. And finally, there's self-leadership, which we touched on earlier.
That's about taking ownership of your own motivation, thoughts, and behaviors, right?
Right. It's about being intentional and proactive in shaping your own destiny.
And the source emphasizes that these attitudes, they're often more readily practiced and developed than those deeply rooted beliefs.
So it's a good place to start if you're looking to cultivate a more positive and entrepreneurial mindset.
Now let's bring it all back to our main theme, happiness.
All right, back to happiness.
The source distinguishes between two main types of happiness, hedonic happiness and eudaimonic happiness.
Okay, what's the difference?
Hedonic happiness is about experiencing positive emotions like joy, pleasure, and excitement.
So it's about feeling good in the moment.
Exactly. Whereas eudaimonic happiness is about that deeper sense of well-being, meaning, and fulfillment.
It's about living a life that's aligned with your values and purpose.
Right. And it encompasses those PERMA elements we talked about earlier. Positive emotions, engagement, relationships, meaning, and achievement.
So hedonic happiness is about feeling good. And eudaimonic happiness is about living well.
That's a good way to put it. And a key insight from the source is that beyond a certain basic level, external circumstances like how much money you make, your marital status, or even your physical health have a surprisingly limited long-term impact on your overall happiness.
Really?
Yeah, it's kind of mind-blowing when you think about it.
So all those things we chase after, they don't actually guarantee happiness in the long run.
Not necessarily, and this is largely due to something called hedonic adaptation.
Hedonic adaptation, what's that?
It's basically our tendency to get used to new circumstances, even positive ones.
So, like, we get a raise at work and we're excited for a while, but then it just becomes our new normal.
Exactly. We adapt, and the happiness boost fades.
That's kind of depressing.
It can be. But the good news is, our positive mindsets, those beliefs and attitudes we've been talking about, they have a much more significant and lasting impact on eudaimonic happiness.
So it's about building ourselves up from the inside out, rather than relying on external factors to make us happy.
Exactly. And the source highlights that engaging in entrepreneurial behaviors, even if they don't lead to immediate financial success, can be incredibly valuable in building that positive entrepreneurial mindset.
So it's not just about the outcome, it's about the journey.
Right. It's about developing those skills and attitudes that contribute to long-term happiness and well-being.
And this ties into the idea of seeking PERMA through entrepreneurial projects.
Because it's about more than just feeling good in the moment, it's about engaging in activities that provide a sense of meaning, purpose, and accomplishment.
And this is where the concept of flow comes in.
Flow. Like going with the flow.
Kind of, but it's more specific than that.
Okay, tell me more.
Flow is a state of complete immersion and engagement in an activity where you lose track of time and feel completely absorbed in what you're doing.
I've definitely experienced that before, like when I'm working on a creative project that I'm really passionate about.
Exactly. And the source explains that to find flow, you need to seek out activities that challenge you appropriately, pushing you out of your comfort zone, but not overwhelming you with difficulty.
So it's about finding that sweet spot between boredom and anxiety.
Exactly. And when you're in a state of flow, you're not only more productive and creative, but you're also experiencing a deep sense of satisfaction and fulfillment.
Now, the source brings us back to self-leadership and self-talk as essential tools on this journey towards greater happiness and well-being.
Because ultimately, we have the power to shape our own thoughts, feelings, and actions.
Right. And self-leadership is about consciously choosing to use that power.
Exactly. It's defined as intentionally influencing your own thoughts, feelings, and actions to achieve your goals and enhance your well-being.
And it involves a range of specific strategies, right?
Yes. The source outlines several key strategies, including setting clear and achievable goals, rewarding yourself for progress, consciously observing your own behaviors and their impact, using cues to stay focused, visualizing your success, engaging in positive and constructive self-talk, and regularly evaluating your beliefs to see if they're serving you.
That's a pretty comprehensive toolkit.
It is. And it's about being proactive and intentional in shaping your own inner world.
Now, we talked about positive self-talk earlier, and the source really emphasizes that it's not about empty affirmations or trying to fool yourself into feeling good.
It's about choosing thoughts that are both positive and truthful.
And focusing on those thoughts consistently.
Exactly. It's about creating a more supportive and empowering internal dialogue.
Now, finally, the source introduces a really interesting perspective on the power of art.
Art. Like paintings and music.
Yeah, things like movies, music, literature, visual arts, all of that.
Okay, what about it?
The idea is that the art we choose to consume can actually reinforce either positive or negative worldviews and how we see ourselves.
Wow, I never thought about it that way.
Yeah, it's pretty profound when you think about it. It's almost like we're feeding our subconscious elephant with the messages and imagery we expose ourselves to.
So if we're constantly watching violent movies or listening to depressing music, we're essentially training our minds to see the world as a negative and hostile place.
Exactly. And the source encourages us to be more conscious about the art we engage with, choosing content that aligns with the positive beliefs and attitudes we want to cultivate.
So, like, instead of watching a horror movie that's going to leave you feeling anxious and afraid, maybe watch a comedy that will lift your spirits and make you laugh.
Right. Or instead of listening to music that makes you feel sad and lonely, maybe listen to something upbeat and inspiring.
It's about choosing art that nourishes your soul and reinforces the kind of person you want to be.
And they even use the example of Michelangelo's David as an inspirational image embodying self-belief and resilience.
Yeah, that's a powerful image.
It's about seeing the potential within yourself and having the courage to strive for greatness.
And they contrast it with something like Munch's The Scream, which might evoke feelings of anxiety and helplessness.
It's about recognizing that the art we surround ourselves with can have a real impact on our mood and outlook.
and they share an anecdote about someone who kept a poster of ecstasy in their room as a reminder of positive experiences.
It's about creating an environment that supports your well-being and inspires you to live a more fulfilling life.
So to wrap it all up, this deep dive into the source material really highlights the power of our mindset in shaping our happiness and well-being.
It's about recognizing that we're not just passive recipients of our circumstances. We have the power to choose our thoughts, our attitudes, and our actions.
And by consciously cultivating those positive beliefs and attitudes, we can create a more fulfilling and meaningful life for ourselves.
It's about building ourselves up from the inside out.
And using the tools and techniques of CBT, positive psychology, and self-leadership to navigate the inevitable challenges of life with greater resilience and optimism.
So for you, our listener, I encourage you to really reflect on these concepts.
Think about which cognitive distortions might be something you recognize in yourself.
Consider trying out some of those self-leadership and positive self-talk techniques in your own life.
And here's a final thought to ponder. Given the immense power of both our internal mindset and the external influences we choose to,